and all living beings, all of whom are expansions of His Supreme Personality. Then He would touch auspicious things. He would decorate His body, the very ornament of human society, with His own special clothes and jewelry, and with divine flower garlands and ointments. He would then look at ghee, a mirror, the cows and bulls, the brahmanas and the demigods, and see to it that the members of all the social classes living in the palace and throughout the city were satisfied with gifts. He would greet His ministers, gratifying them by fulfilling all their desires. Holding on to His chariot's hands, Lord Krishna would mount the chariot together with Satyaki and Uddhava, just like the sun rising over the easternmost mountain. The palace women would look upon Lord Krishna with shy, loving glances, and thus He would get free from them, only with difficulty. He would then set off, His smiling face captivating their minds. So then, scene two, He's in the assembly hall. As the Almighty Supreme Lord would seat Himself upon His exalted throne there in the assembly hall, He shone with His unique effulgence, illuminating all the quarters of space. Surrounded by the Jadus, lions among men, that best of the Jadus appeared like the moon amidst many stars. These performers would dance and sing to the sounds of mridangas, veenas, mirajas, flutes, cymbals, and conch shells, while professional poets, chroniclers, and panegyrists would recite the Lord's glories. And there, O King, jesters would entertain the Lord by displaying various comic moods. Expert entertainers would perform for Him, and female dancers would dance energetically. I mean, what a fantastic movie this is, huh? We're in this movie now. We're all players in God's movie. We can see and touch Him in this movie. We're individual persons. We're persons. Each of us is individual person, surrounded by all these exalted personalities. And there is Krishna. And He wants to hear my report. He's perplexed. He needs my advice. Where in all of organized religion do you find this kind of access to God? We are so internally indebted to our Vaishnava spiritual masters who have given us this access, who have given us this ticket to the movie. And the password to the secret is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I don't know about you, but from an early age, I always thought that God must be more handsome and more beautiful even than the most handsome movie star. That He wasn't some old man in the sky with a long white beard. And when the Swami, Bhaktivedanta Swami, told us, yes, He is the most beautiful person, and His name is Krishna. Whoa! Krishna means all beautiful. Thought, okay, I can dig this. Please show me how to see Him. I surrender. And the Swami Himself was so beautiful. In the course of writing this book, I just recently examined 30,000 photos of Prabhupada. Can you imagine? 30,000. And there's probably a lot more I haven't seen. But I did not see in any photo a bad photo. Prabhupada off guard or not looking great. He looks great in every photo you see of Prabhupada. Oh, well, who can match that? There's no other person like that anywhere. His face is so luminous. His face was so luminous. Mobile. Ever new and surprising expressions. And mostly very, very pleasant expressions. Even in his anger. Or like when he was railing against the Mayavadis. It was a fascinating display of beauty. And then moving out from his face, his shoulders, arms, and his hands were extensions of his mood. It was like watching a never-ending dance with Prabhupada, like a ballet. And it just kept going, day after day after day after day. You couldn't keep your eyes off of Prabhupada. And when he spoke, oh, his words enhanced his beauty a millionfold. In this way, we were captivated by Prabhupada's beauty. And he is only the messenger? This fascinating, beautiful man is just the messenger? How beautiful Krishna must be. Yes, the Swami said. And you can see and touch him. Whoa. When the Swami found us, just like this verse, we were all total outcasts. The lowest of mankind. You can't even imagine how low we were in our lives. Meat eaters. Living for sense gratification. Taking drugs upon waking in the morning just to feel better all day. A different drug 3-4 times a day. Wow, let's do this, let's do that. Illicit sex. You can't even imagine, you young boys and girls in India, how degraded my generation was in America in the 1960s. And here came this man, Prabhupada, the Swami, came to us and offered us everything so freely, these outcasts. But we were so entranced by Prabhupada's beauty that we started to hear and chant and meditate on Krishna. And even we began to become purified. In a way, beauty is purity. When you see or hear or somehow sense something beautiful, you're uplifted. You're purified in that moment of wonder. And the Swami brought us, by his personal example, slowly into this world of pure beauty. He says, you just give something to Krishna, a little thing, just a little thing, and he will give you back. You just give him little food. He doesn't eat much. Just give him little food, and he'll feed you sumptuously. You just share something from your mind, your thoughts, with Krishna, and he will share his mind with you. So this is Krishna consciousness. Learning how to see and touch Krishna. And Krishna is so kind. In this verse, the Sanskrit words, Brahma Maya Shesha. Brahma Maya Shesha. This term. Sridhar Goswami translates this term as of the concentrated form of the absolute truth. Concentrated. Once I asked Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, when you see Krishna, what is it like? And he paused and he thought and said, you have seen this acetylene torch, this welding? That was his answer. You've seen this arc welding. You can't look. It's too intense. It's the most concentrated form of heat we know. But Krishna is so kind that he has taken this immense, incalculable, inconceivable power. I mean, with our latest technology, we can look back. We can look and perceive light that has been traveling at, 275,000 miles a second or something, for 4 billion years, and we're only seeing a tiny fraction of the material worlds. We're only seeing a tiny, like, not even a millimeter of the material creation of Krishna. Billions of minute living entities live on my body. I can't perceive them, but I'm covered with billions of living entities myself. What to speak of in every square inch of this world and all the worlds. These Western Ghat mountains in India, they're half of some of these mountains, the other half is in Madagascar. Thousands of miles away. And India has drifted slowly at the rate of 1/8 of an inch a year. That much distance. The Himalayan mountains at 29,000 feet were once at the bottom of the sea. So how can we conceive this immense power of Krishna? We can't even begin to wrap our heads around it. It's so vast. And yet, here he is, in his condensed form. So kindly he's sitting there, hearing our news, touching our hand when we hand him our report, and smiling at our sage advice. Many people used to ask Srila Prabhupada, "Do you see Krishna?" Prabhupada would always answer, "Yes, you do not. He's all around you. You cannot see, you cannot hear, you cannot taste. He's outside of you, everywhere. He's inside of you. What is the difficulty?" Water here. So Prabhupada told us we have to develop the eyes to see Krishna. But he said it's very easy. He used to use the fish and the water example. Well, if we fall into the ocean, very soon we will drown. We don't have bodies able to survive in the water. Within minutes, we're finished. But a little fish this big, he can live in tumultuous waves of water. So gradually, Prabhupada said, you become the fish. It's easy. He used to say, it's so easy. And we may say, oh, it's not so easy. So Prabhupada just said, try. That's all he asked. Just try. And ultimately, Krishna is so kind, he will reveal himself. It's only by this mercy, only by Krishna's mercy, from our trying, that this happens, that we get to touch Krishna. And so once you master or internalize this point of view, that Krishna is everywhere, all around, inside, outside, you're in the movie. And it's a movie full of adventure and action and magic and romance and love and comedy. And it never ends. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anyone have any questions or comments? It's so nice to be among you again, all of you. It's just like coming home, like I left yesterday. Yes?
Hey, Krishna Guruji. Would you please share more of your experience when you first saw Prabhupada?
When I first saw Prabhupada? All right, yes. Well, my best friend, his name was Michael, had already met the Swami in New York. And my friend Michael, he was a total sense gratification man. He was my friend for that reason. We used to do all kinds of nonsense together, and he was my best friend in that regard. We plumbed the depths of degradation together, so he was very close to me. But when he came back into my life after meeting the Swami, he was totally changed. He was always happy. He refused any kinds of offers of sense gratification. "But Michael, please have some coffee at least." No, "I'm fine, thank you." What to speak of meat or anything else. So by his personal example, I began to understand, oh, this Swami must be very powerful. He must be good. I want to meet this guy too. My friend is happy. Always. I tested him for almost a month, 2 months. I lived with him after he became devotee. Testing him. And he never wavered. He chanted on those big red beads, Hare Krishna mantra. And he was always smiling and laughing. And he told me the purpose of life was to serve Krishna. Just convert your energies into doing something for Krishna. You don't have to stop anything. Just convert it. And it began to make sense, very great sense. He didn't know much philosophy. None of it, we didn't even have Bhagavad Gita. We had no books. All we had was Prabhupada's personal example. For months and years, even. So, by seeing Mukunda, he was Mukunda Das, I knew that this Swami must be very great. And then when I saw him for the first time when he arrived in San Francisco, it was immediately apparent, yes, I made the right decision. I saw Prabhupada, or the Swami, in a mood of that he was magic. All we knew about yogis and saints, these kind of people we read about in books, we didn't have much information about India. No one had ever seen India. We'd never seen an Indian person before, except Prabhupada. But we read about these magic things that were supposed to happen in India. So we saw Prabhupada in that way, the magic man. And the fact that he came through this window of time, he was born in the last century, and when they didn't even have electricity or automobiles, radios they had, a few radios, that's it. And here he came into our space age, 1967. We went to the moon in 68 or 9 or something like that. Anyway, we had spaceships already. And here was Prabhupada. The fact that he risked everything to come to us like this. And we were all risky people to begin with. We liked adventure, change, challenge. So Prabhupada found the right audience. He found a bunch of adventurers. And he was like our pirate chief, the chief of the pirates. Just do it. Whatever works. Come on, let's go. This is what fascinated me so much about, and my godbrothers and sisters at the time, that Prabhupada was such an adventurous, risky man. He loved the challenge. He went for the rhino. That was his expression. So we all adopted that way of life. Whatever Prabhupada wanted, we moved heaven and earth. And he told us from the very beginning that Krishna likes, he loves all of his devotees, of course. But he's most dear to those who take the biggest risk for him. He has to personally help us. He has to personally interfere to remove obstacles to our service. And we got to see that immediately. Time after time after time, some impossible task. If we have worked very hard at it, it happened. Suddenly the curtain would part and everything we wanted would occur. And this was Prabhupada's magic. We could see it, experience it for real. It was realization. It wasn't theoretical. We could feel it happening. And this kind of happiness that we experience was something unusual in our lives. We were happiness seekers. Everyone is. But my generation, called the hippies, was probably the most extreme pleasure seekers of a generation that this planet has ever seen. And at the extreme pleasure we were starting to feel by serving Srila Prabhupada was more than anything we had ever experienced by far on any drugs or other sensory experiences. So we got hooked. We got hooked on Prabhupada's beauty. He was so beautiful. Every movement he made, everything he said was a moment of pure beauty, suspended in time. And it just kept going and going and going and going. Yeah. So, his personal example is what has saved us all. Without that personal example, your Radhanath Swami, your other God brothers and God sisters, without their example of Krishna consciousness, it's too difficult. But another thing that Prabhupada gave us were these incredible books. God, we're actually able to read this knowledge for the first time in thousands of years. Thousands of years have passed without access to this. Prabhupada gave it to us. We have these verses. We can go into the movie where Krishna was in his palace with all of his queens at night, 16,000 palaces. And they would somehow all become one in the morning. And Krishna would do this and do that and dress himself in this way and say this and bless the Brahmins and do all these things. We could see him. We can see him doing it in this movie. And we can be in this movie. We're part of this movie. We have a ticket inside this movie. And it's an eternal movie full of every pleasure known. All right. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Yes?
Hare Krishna, thank you for your wonderful lectures. I heard that the repress of Krishna consciousness is greed to get it. So sometimes when we are eagerness to become Krishna consciousness, we may go extremely. So I want to know how to balance the eagerness to get Krishna consciousness and at the same time be patient. Thank you.
Good question. She wants to know how we balance our eagerness, our enthusiasm to become Krishna conscious with patience. Right? Where are you from?
Where?
China! Woo! Prabhupada would be so pleased. Unbelievable. One time we were in Hong Kong with Prabhupada, and he told us, in those days it was a very separated place, the communist world, China, Mao Zedong, all this. And there was a strict border between Hong Kong and the rest of China. As we walked in the streets of Hong Kong, Prabhupada said, "One day all of China will become Krishna conscious." Who could believe it, huh? Same thing he said on the streets of Moscow in 1970. Cold War period, no way to even imagine worshiping God in this country of Russia. And Prabhupada said the same thing, and someday everyone will be Krishna conscious in Russia. And all of these are things are coming to pass. So a little patience required. it's not going to happen immediately. And I've noticed that the more eager we are to serve Krishna, the faster it happens. Things happen faster. But it's almost like waves. In my own, at least my own life, sometimes I'm extremely happy and enthusiastic, and then, oh, it goes down again. But each time the wave gets smaller. Each time the wave gets smaller, and the happiness part of it stays longer. Everyone is different. We're all individuals. I've seen many of my god brothers and sisters become very Krishna conscious very fast. I'm a very slow developer myself. So everyone is going to be individual. But as long as you practice and try and try and try, Krishna must help you. He must help you. And only by His mercy do we get this Krishna consciousness. He's there always, like I was saying. He's everywhere. But when we get those eyes, finally we get those eyes to see Him, then the pleasure goes unending. It will happen. You will see Krishna. You will touch Krishna. Hare Krishna. All right. What's next? What do we do next? What is the next? Early? Do we chant?
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Prabhuji, could you elaborate on your observation of Prabhupada, how Prabhupada never gave up on his disciples, no matter what they did, what happened to them?
Yes, I'm the perfect example. His question is, Prabhupada never gave up on any of his disciples. He told us many times, he said, "Now I have accepted you as my disciple, so I must stay with you until you are liberated." Once we have taken this vow, he must stay with us, so he never gives up. He never gives up. We may give up, but he never gives up trying to push us farther. Who knows how long it may take. But, you know, always when someone would drop away, he would say, "Oh," he would call me into his room and say, "Write a letter to so-and-so. See if we invite him to come and live with me." Like that. He was so merciful to his disciples that would fall out. I'm the perfect example. I went off into a business world, mining. Mining is the most risky of all business ventures. I became absorbed in it, almost forgot about Krishna. But I began to see all the time that Krishna, whatever Prabhupada told me and taught me in the past, never went away. It would always come back, always come back. And in recent years, especially writing this book, Prabhupada has become more apparent and more clear and more involved in my life than ever before. Ever before. I see Prabhupada, I'm closer to Prabhupada now than even when I was his secretary with him day and night. This book, I thought, oh, I'll remember everything and write it all down in 4, maybe 6 weeks. I'll have it finished. These are just memories. I know them 1, 2, 3, 4 like that. But when I sat down and began writing, Prabhupada came into my heart again. And I said, "Prabhupada, have you forgiven me? Can you now help me?" "Yes. All is forgiven. You carry on now. Here's what happened on that day. Here's what happened on that day." He began to instruct me from inside what happened those days. So it took me almost 2 years to finish those memories. And I wrote every day. I got up in the morning and wrote until dark. I would get to my computer and write and write and write and look up, and it's dark outside and I'm still in my pajamas. I became so filled with Prabhupada. So he never gives up. He's always with us. You just have to open yourself and pray for his pray for His presence again in your life if you forget Him. It's not that He is forgetting you. You are forgetting Him. He always remembers. Every one of His disciples He remembers. He has to. That's His job. He has promised Krishna He will deliver you. Well, you must do that. I used to, as I began to develop the book, I began to remember every day of things that happened. At first, my memories were so broad, like a few weeks span would be reduced to one story, two stories. And then as I started chronologically following this experience with Srila Prabhupada, 7 years of it, almost every day would be important to the whole story. Oh, but what happened that day? What happened that... Oh, we were in Mayapur, yes, I remember that, but gosh, I can't remember what happened that day. So I would research in all of the database, everything Prabhupada ever said and did is compiled. We have this marvelous, I mean, you can't thank Ekanath and his team at the Bhaktivedanta Archives enough for preserving everything Prabhupada said and did in this wonderful Veda base we have access to now with our computers. People can even do it on their watches. They can read find out what, read the conversation that Prabhupada had on such and such a date, 1970 or 68 or 73, whatever. It's all preserved in these archives. So I went through those. I went through all the books written by other devotees. I went on the internet, checked out, what was the weather that day in London in May 23rd, 1969. I got, so much information that way. But still, I would occasionally be puzzled. What happened that day? What? I know Prabhupada said something very important. I can't remember what it is. And I would go to bed and sleep. And sure enough, Prabhupada would come in a dream. If I was completely stymied, Prabhupada would tell me in a dream what happened that day. I kept a little pad of paper by the bed and a pen. I'd wake up in the morning, and there's about a 10-minute period there between sleep and wakefulness where everything is very clear. Everything is so clear. And scratch a few notes, rush to my computer, move on with the book. So it was Prabhupada's personal mercy. I began to see more and more how Prabhupada's spirit is what he is. Not his personal presence, but his spirit presence. It's there. It's never ending. It's eternal. And you are his eternal children. You're going to always be with him. He said over and over again, he said, we will all be together in the spiritual sky, all of us. And he would name off all the names of the people in the room. We will all be together, all of us. So I don't fear death anymore. We'll be with Prabhupada. Death will be a welcome thing. Prabhupada will guide us through death into his presence again. There's no doubt. Fearless. Abhay. Is his first name, Mr. Fearless. Imagine a life without fear. Ooh. It's yours. It's a movie. You're either in the movie or out of the movie. Hare Bol. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Should we chant? Do you have something? What is the time? 9:10? Shall we chant something? Chant? Okay. When Prabhupada first came to San Francisco in the early days in 1967, he taught us a melody for the Hare Krishna mantra called the Morning Melody. I don't know if everyone knows that melody, but it's very beautiful from the morning. So, shall we chant? Okay. I'll try to. I'm not very good at this chanting. Hare Krishna.